The devil with such wrath knows he has to change his strategy. And the strategy is this. I'm going after their very faith. I'm going after their homes, their marriages. I'm going to try to paralyze every spiritual man and woman on the face of the earth.
There's something in you that says, I can do more. This just can't be it. There's something in you. There's a calling on your life. But I got a saying, when life knocks you down, try and land on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has entered the heart of mankind what's in store for you if you challenge yourself, if you persist and persevere.
Because real lions like to hunt. They love the process just as much as they love the prize. And some of y'all just want to score. You don't like the process. You're not in love with the process.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Cole Davis with the Lions Path Radio Show here on Hebrew Nation Radio and Facebook Live, YouTube, however you're listening. Thank you for joining us this evening. We are back. Last week, we had to take the week off. Had a sick toddler and was getting ready to travel the next day. And then I got sick, too, which was awesome. So that, isn't that fun? And then how it goes, right? And had to take some time because we had the United in Worship Conference last weekend, and it was a tremendous time. Such a time of blessing. And I want to encourage you, unitedinworship.org. We got one more coming in the Atlanta area. Oh man, it was a good time. Great people, great worship. Everything was just awesome. So hope that, hope that you're, blessed by this program. Hope you're blessed by this ministry. We have Godly Men of Valor this weekend. And, this weekend, we are feeling the pressure, but it's a great pressure. We're ready for it. So if you'd be in prayer for it, and all the gentlemen that are coming, that they'd be blessed. If they need to be delivered of something, whatever it may be, we are so grateful. So onthatday.org is our website. Everything that we do here, everything we do in ministry is on YouTube for free. We are coming up. I think we are now, I think I had to push it back one more. After tonight, we are five episodes away from our 200th Lions Path episode. Yah willing, we'll get there. And I pray that you would consider going to onthatday.org, supporting us. The Father is calling us to full-time ministry. We really think after this weekend and this week, I am officially out of leave, which makes things very complicated, serving two masters. So we're going to have to step out on faith, but we're trying to make it as calculated a leap of faith as we can. Also, like I said 2 weeks ago, sacredapparel.net has brought me on as it's a Hebrew wardrobe company, t-shirts right now. They plan to move into other things. They brought me on as a designer and as an advisor, and I love their stuff. So sacredapparel.net, pray that you'll go and support a good, hardworking Hebrew family that really wants to put the message of holiness and sacredness out there. In fact, live life kadosh is what that shirt says there. So I'm wearing their stuff. Isn't that fun? Okay. So this evening, this evening is a teaching that I've done before to a degree. I've done this subject before, and it's the subject of self-pity. Self-pity and I have a long history, and fairly recently it was one of those emotional states, decisions, however you want to make it. We're going to talk about what it exactly is this evening. Self-pity is a idolization, to lay it right up front, an idolization of one's own issues and one's own problems. I plan to speak for a little bit, and then please be prepared. We'll open it up for questions probably in the second half. This evokes a lot of thought, a lot of questions, how to move past this. That's going to be the key. And I'm grateful that for right now that we are broadcasting, and I plan to not go off the air at any point. You know, we unplugged our microphone last week, which messed up our whole thing last week, but plan to be here. So have your questions ready to go. Self-pity is one of those emotional states. It's actually kind of a John Gardner writes this about this. He says, self-pity is easily the most destructive of the non-pharmaceutical narcotics. It is addictive, gives momentary pleasure and separates the victim from reality. And that is essentially the reason that I was listening to a couple things about self-pity this evening. Something that somebody said is it seems like self-pity is so hard to let go of. And that is absolutely true. There's a quote by Stephen Fry that says this: self-pity destroys everything around it but itself. It will destroy health, it'll destroy relationships, because it is the focusing of one's attention, if you will, on their own issues, on their current state, removes all aspect of hope, removes all aspect of responsibility, and removes all aspect of joy. And the reason that this becomes so destructive is because it literally stops everything in its path. I was thinking about this earlier. What is the difference between self-pity and shame? I think they're very, very closely related, even though shame can still be somewhat beneficial. Shame kind of reveals to you that there is an issue between you and the idea of your own existence. Shame is a regret or a remorse over the fact that you exist. I say that the new thing about self-pity that I say is self-pity is when idealism turns on you. So what self-pity, the word that kind of describes self-pity the best, is a dangerous word that many of us use every day, and we really need to cut it out. We definitely need to quit saying it to other people, is the word should. Okay? Should is a word based in idealism. Now, I have no issue with idealism. Idealism is the idea of situational, circumstantial perfection, if you will. An ideal is something, a standard or something that seems perfect in a way. But the problem is when idealism gets shattered or idealism becomes toxic, it becomes self-pity, especially about one's own issues. So basically, I shouldn't be dealing with this. This shouldn't have happened to me. This shouldn't ever go on. I shouldn't feel this way. And then it gets dangerous when we go, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that. You know what you should do is, and that word is very, very loaded. It becomes very loaded. And the reason it becomes very loaded is because we are proposing something that is completely hypothetical based in our own opinion. Here's what you should do. That, here's what I'm going to help you do. Here's what I would not do. Something along those lines, but should becomes a very dangerous word at times. Okay. I don't really like quoting her, but she's in here and I can't help it. When something's true, it's true. Helen Keller is not necessarily a great source, but at the same time, when she says this, I got to agree with her, at least on this point. Self-pity is our worst enemy, and if we yield to it, we can never do anything good in the world. Self-pity stops everything good in your life in its tracks. Why? Because you never take advantage of it. Good things will come, and you won't see them because you're too busy looking at what went wrong or what should have gone right. And what happened to you, your own experiences, and you dwell on those. And so the reason that self-pity is such an enemy to us is because it is a form of idolatry. It is bowing down to the idol of your own issues, like we said earlier. It also is self-indulgently dwelling on one's own sorrows or trials. Okay? I wrote down a note. Let me get it real quick here. So the other thing about self-pity, something else that came to me, is self-pity is also accepting defeat and causing in your mind and in your emotions, a finality, meaning you feel like something is over, like something has gone beyond repair. This is part of that whole, it stops everything good in its tracks. It also means that you end up forfeiting your meaning of life. What gives our life meaning is responsibility, struggle, overcoming, all of those things. Our life has meaning because the Father, yes, the Father has assigned meaning to it. But the meaning is also based in responsibility, sacrifice, overcoming, struggle, good effort, good work, things of that nature. And when you indulge in self-pity, it stops all enjoyment of those things, all growth from those things in its tracks. Unforgiveness is something that is so powerful that the Messiah actually says that if we don't forgive, we will not be forgiven. Well, the other reason that unforgiveness is so powerful is because unforgiveness also stops everything in its tracks. All emotional processing of an event, of a wrongdoing, of a need for justice, all of those things stops when we stop forgiving. Forgiveness literally opens that door within us for us to be able to move past the place of hurt or pain or wounding or whatever it may be. Unforgiveness shuts the door and keeps you in the emotional state of hurt that you're in. Okay? So understand that self-pity, and this is a strong word, I want you to hear me on this, is sinful by nature. Is sinful by nature. It is the result of sin either that we committed or was committed against us. Okay? It is always the result of sin. Now, here's the issue. Self-pity removes your responsibility to either forgive or be forgiven for it. Self-pity lets you stay in that place of wounding or having wounded somebody. I deal with this quite a bit with individuals. I had a young man recently reach out to me, and he was steeped in self-pity, and he was so sure that he had committed the unforgivable sin, and nothing I could say to him, no Bible verse, no nothing, could reach through because his self-pity was so thick on him that he could not hear goodness anymore. He could not hear joy anymore. He couldn't hear any of those things. How do you know whether what you're feeling is sorrow or just plain, or is plain sorrow or self-pity? Here's how you can tell. Sorrow will lead you to repentance. I feel really bad about that. I am sorrowful that I did that, or I feel sorrowful that that happened to me. But I'm going to bring it to the Father because I do not want to stay in this place. Self-pity goes, I am defined by that now. I don't have to move forward. And I'm going to keep dwelling on this because I'm going to accept this as my identity. It's not always the result of trauma. If it was, most of us would be in self-pity. This is why individuals who overcome trauma, they will tell you that self-pity is one of the most dangerous things that you can indulge in overcoming. I'm still getting over my coughing. I'm doing a lot of talking. Okay? Godly sorrow produces repentance. Plain and simple. Let me lower my voice and slow down a little bit. Excuse me. Erwin Lutzer writes this. He says this: Satan exploits pain by making it the central focus of the man's or woman's thoughts and attitudes. Self-pity becomes one of those, and I've had my fair share of it, and the way it feels is that all of a sudden it's everything that you think about. You know how your brain switches over to like autopilot? Recently we were having a situation, and something was really, really tough for me to get past. I was having a really hard time letting go of something. And I would be, you know how you're not thinking, but you're thinking. I'm not intentionally using my brain power, but in the background, I realized that it was like I was having a conversation with myself behind myself about the situation. And it became a source of constant trying to work it out, but I wasn't working it out. What I was doing was festering the wound that was created. I was trying to let my hurt devise a plan of how to respond next time. I was trying to let my pain dictate to me how I was going to, all the conversations I was going to have, all of the issues I was having at the time. I was letting that, I thought I was processing, but I noticed that I didn't feel better afterwards. I felt worse. And it was like I would get ready to let it go. My brain would then start doing this thing where all of a sudden I'm thinking about it, I'm talking about it, I'm doing all this in my head. And I'm going, man, I'm right back where I was. The pain, it was like I've just festered the pain right back up. And I believe that that's also part of self-pity, is that you cannot, if you had been sinned against and you and you're processing it, it can be very easily and very quickly, part of self-pity can easily become nursing anger against your brother. When it's just about to fade and you're just about to move past it, you're just about to forgive, you are reminded then of all the pain that this caused. Now, I would love to tell you that that's 100% in the enemy's court and you can rebuke it, but that's also your flesh trying to make sure that you don't get hurt again, but it's corrupting the process. It's choosing bitterness and defensiveness rather than forgiveness and restoration. If nothing else, forgiveness to your heart, forgiveness and restoration to your emotional state, to where you can get back to enjoying life again after you've been hurt. Okay? Self-pity also violates the first commandment. Now, there are arguments out there about what the first commandment is. I hold the first commandment is, I am the Lord, or I am Yahweh, your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. It is that declaration to remind us of what he's done and who he is. The reason that self-pity violates that first commandment is because the very nature of the first commandment is to remind us that the Father leads us out of bondage. He leads us out of bondage. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves, we become cynical, we become bitter, we become angry, we become defensive, we become short, we don't feel safe around relationships. It festers and consumes everything around it. Forgiveness is not some, forgive me, I will tell you, I'll confess something to you. When I was very young, I looked at forgiveness as like choosing love and doing all these things, and it's kind of a hippie move. And, you know, my lack of wisdom when I was young, you can hear it. I just hear it now, and I go, bleh. It's amazing. The Father, he is a God of long suffering and patience, isn't he? And mercy. Praise you, Father. But at the same time, I'm sitting here going, forgiveness is also extremely practical. It's also extremely healthy. It's also extremely beneficial. See, 1 Corinthians 1:4 says this, I thank my Elohim always for you because of Elohim's love and kindness given to you through the Messiah Yeshua. Self-pity will attack your testimony faster than anything else. It will remove all focus off of the Messiah and put it on your own issues. Put it on that hurt. Put it on that place of pain. Self-pity is bondage. It is bondage because we refuse to be set free. We engage in this place within us where we begin to think everything that tainted lens that we have within us after, as a result of whatever happened. Now, where this goes down to is this, my brothers and sisters, is self-pity is 100% a choice, and it will lie to you and tell you that it's a reaction or that it's a result. No, brothers and sisters, it is a choice. One thing the Messiah never engaged in, being fully human and fully Elohim, like I believe, one thing that he never did was engage in self-pity. Even in the garden, he never engaged in self-pity. He asked for things to be taken from him. He asked if Father's will be done, but he never engaged in self-pity. In fact, even before Pilate, you have no authority except what's given to you from above. I am not going to engage in this. We are to be like our Messiah. We are to be like him. Imitate him. Be imitators of Messiah. Self-pity was not part. Now, I will tell you this, that our brother Elijah, the prophet, our blessed prophet, did engage in self-pity after the time, I believe it was self-pity. There's many studies on this. The Father had to remind him, this is not outside of my control. And not only that, what I find interesting about Elijah, Elijah's running from Jezebel after calling down fire on Mount Carmel. He comes and he finds out Jezebel's still angry with him. She's still murderous. The people are still not doing anything about this lady, whatever it may be, whatever his motivation was. He runs and immediately engages in despair and he begins to look at himself. He goes, the reason I know that is because he goes, I'm the only one left. And the Father confronts that and says, there's always a remnant. But I find interesting is in the midst of all this, the Father sent not a contradiction. He sent ministry to Elijah. Basically, he took care of Elijah through the angel. He gave him bits of flesh. He gave him bread. He let him sleep, rest, take a break. And it becomes one of those deals where all of your, you could do something mighty for the Father. You can do all the things. As being in ministry is, a counselor friend of mine said this one time. He said, once you get done with ministry, you kind of have a little bit of a hangover because you're coming back down from the mountain and you're human again. All of a sudden it hits you again. All the stuff you deal with, all that stuff that it lives within you that you're working through and you're processing, but it's all waiting on you when you get down off the mountain. And I believe that our brother Elijah, even as advanced as he was, still struggled so much with this sense of idealism, if you will. Not judging the gentleman, of course. But I believe that he lived in idealism, but when nothing really, he killed all these prophets of Baal, that changed. But Jezebel didn't change, Ahab didn't change. The people saw the mighty things of Yah, so his idealism, if you will, turned on him. I was hoping it'd be different than this. I'm the only one left. I'm all this stuff, and I'm his sense of idealism turned on him. Hope that makes sense. Philippians 4:6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to Elohim. The answer to self-pity is thanksgiving. We did a teaching months ago called Personal Lamentations and Freedom. We used Psalm 69 as a backdrop for this because we saw that King David was declaring to the Father, he was lamenting to the Father the state that he was in. Help me, Elohim, because I'm sinking into the miry mud. Basically, he's talking about depression. At the end of it, he's praying the whole time. Self-pity will not allow you to pray at a certain point. David was not engaging in self-pity. However, you can follow his example and see what he did to avoid entering into self-pity, if you will, because he said he went to the Father, declared where he was, countered everything that was happening to him in his authority, and, you know, I come against all these things, and then he ended up being a worshiper and praiser of the Most High by the end of that psalm. I'm going to tell you, folks, when you start to get into self-pity, this may be where you need your neighbor to come in lovingly to point out to you, you are in self-pity. I need to get up and I need to get out of the list, if you will, and help. Let me help you get back on the path, the lion's path, right? What can you, sometimes we just need somebody to snap us out of that and go, what can you be grateful for right now? What can you thank the Father for right now? No matter how mundane or practical it is, what can you thank the Father for? Well, I'm thankful that I got to eat breakfast this morning. I'm thankful that I'm wearing clothes. I'm thankful for the dwelling that I'm in. You may not have had any of those things, but we can always find something to be thankful for. Self-pity will not allow you to do that. And oftentimes this is where our love for one another and the loving our neighbor as ourself, we may need to reach out in patience and long-suffering and prayer and reach out to individuals that are struggling with this. Now, the other thing about self-pity is that we are tempted to enter into it. It is a temptation to enter into self-pity. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, just before we go to the break, 1 Corinthians 10:13, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. Elohim is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will always provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. My brothers and sisters, a simple answer, the simple escape to self-pity is thanksgiving. Cast all your anxieties on him. Be honest with how you feel about things going on in your life. And we are here as your brothers and sisters to pray for you, to love you. Find something in you right now, no matter where you're listening, find something to be grateful for and lift that up to the Most High. We'll be back here in a few minutes. Hey, welcome back. This is Cole with the Lion's Path Radio Show. Thank you for joining us this evening. I'm excited to be back after United in Worship, after So many good things the Father's doing with us right now and the reach we have. I enjoy meeting you all out on the road, by the way. Thank you to all of you that come up and say we've been listening to you for a while. And it's wonderful to have faces. I see faces now when I look into that little monitor, not just Facebook profile pictures over here. We were talking about self-pity, and if you're interested in putting a question up, go ahead and do so. I think that the questions you all ask sometimes are just monumentally awesome, and I can't wait for them to come up, so please do so. But self-pity also does something huge. Self-pity is a decision that affects your livelihood and your life. It affects your health. John 10:10 says this, "The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." That is the desire of the Most High in your life, for your life to be abundant. And when we choose to engage in self-pity, when we look at everything that's gone wrong and we choose to dwell on it and we make an idol of it and we bow down to it even though we really don't want to, because there's no happiness there, there's no justice there, there's no emotional freedom there, there's nothing of that, definitely no spiritual freedom. We are sacrificing that life more abundantly. The Father meant what he said when he wanted us to do the works that his Son did. The Messiah gave us the authority to overcome the works of the adversary. Yeshua took care of the first one, and he says, "You will do even greater things than I." I can't wait until that comes fruition in your life, in my life, in the body of Messiah as a whole. When we lean in and we begin to forgive more freely, and we begin to look deep within ourselves and find out just how much he loves us. When we engage in self-pity, we will immediately forget that, or we choose to forget that, rather. We choose to look at how we've been wronged, we look at how we've been overcome with everything, and we just pray that, I just pray that you would join me in coming against that work. And if you're not sure if you have it, Father, let somebody lovingly point it out to me if I'm engaging in self-pity. So, all righty. So if we have any questions, you guys are going to leave me hanging for a half hour and I'm going to have to tap dance. I hope not. So, but if you have any questions, you have anything in general, kind of focused on this. If you're asking doctrinal questions, we all have our own doctrine. I'm sure we'll find a way to disagree somewhere on that. But, my experience with self-pity, especially as I've talked to my wife and I have talked about this, self-pity was like a false defense mechanism for me for a long time, especially when I was younger. It would be a way that I would almost retreat into, if I could punish myself, then somebody else wouldn't do it for me. And it stopped them from validating anything that was wrong in my heart. Like, I didn't want my wife to see how much I was struggling, so I would just beat myself up. You know, you get in that defensive mode. Yeah, I know, I'm just terrible, doing blah, blah, blah. Can someone pull themselves out of self-pity, or do you need someone to help you? That's a great question, Teresa. Thank you. So, absolutely, you can pull yourself out of it. But the way you pull yourself out of it, the first step is you have to repent for engaging in it in the first place. It's one element of it. I don't know if it's the first step, but it's one element of it. There has to come repentance at some point, because you're choosing to believe a lie. You're choosing to look at something other than him when he's standing there desiring to have that life flow through you. Can you pull yourself? Absolutely you can. At the same time, understand that the nature of self-pity is that it's addictive. And our flesh, you know, our spirit can be fixed in an instant, but our flesh and our emotions sometimes take a little bit more time. Now, when we really come against something inside of ourselves and we hit it hard, you know, and people sometimes have trouble understanding what I say by that. There is a force within you, within your chest, within your spirit and soul, called intention. Now, it's not the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's not that type of intention. It is the, I believe it's what David and many of the prophets taught. I have purposed myself to do something. I am purposing myself to stand against self-pity. The second that you begin to step out of self-pity, you will start to hear yourself talk differently. The way self-pity sounds is that it's never something good. It's always something about yourself that's awful. Teresa writes again, "What if self-pity keeps you in depression and you lose hope? Then This is where you cry out and do your personal lamentations. Okay? Now, losing hope is a very dangerous situation. I believe even more so. Depression essentially is a, in depression, I don't believe, depression is something else other than self-pity. Depression has many faces. Depression can be chemical, it can be physical, it can be all those things. It can be the result of a vitamin deficiency. My wife, with our last pregnancy, she was so low on vitamin D. I was actually, she's such a strong woman, but I was worried about her because I recognized it when I was depressed. I was going, wow, you're talking just like I did when I was going through this. What's going on? She went and got a blood test. It was vitamin D was almost zero. And once we got that back up, her life came back. So, but at the same time, what if self-pity keeps you in depression and you lose hope? That's the nature of it. Okay? So it's best to be wise enough and pray for wisdom now, which anybody can do. Pray for wisdom to see it and come against it. And to come against depression is a very, very strong thing. It is a very, very strong thing. You are going to have to keep your eyes on Yeshua walking on the water, so to speak. I hope that makes sense here. Laura writes, when you bring it to a loved one's attention that they are in self-pity and they are in denial, and you are doing what you feel like you can, praying, waiting, and it seems like it will never change, what else can you do, I guess, except maybe move on? Well, first of all, this may be where silence actually helps, because in a way, when look at the example of Elijah and the angel didn't really say much to Elijah. He just served him, ministered to him. Rest, relax, move on. What the angel absolutely did not do was validate Elijah's self-pity in any way. Okay? What he did was he just did. He changed the situation for Elijah without saying a word. You know, you've been running, you've been probably fasting, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're really messed up right now. We're going to minister to you. This is where sometimes your silence. See, even sometimes, man, when I was really dealing with this, when I was really dealing with self-pity, even somebody saying, you're in self-pity and you need to change, I'd go, yeah, I know. That's the first sign that somebody's dismissing you, by the way, that they're not hearing you. When I hear somebody say, I know, that's different than somebody saying, I see that. Big difference. Or, I can see how you would say that. I know is dismissive. Okay, so when somebody says, yeah, I know, they're dismissing you, that's when you be quiet and you continue to pray. Biggest thing is with self-pity is that there's also an element of narcissism in it. Not narcissists do this. There is an element of self-centeredness. Let me change that. Narcissist is a strong word. Self-centeredness in this. So when you come against them, they're going to retreat into self. And sometimes when you validate them, it's just fostering it even more. So sometimes just being quiet is a key. But at the same time, not only are you praying for them to come out of it, you're praying for wisdom and how to handle this, especially if this is a loved one that you are absolutely not going to, if this is a child, if this is a spouse, you're going to come against it. Now, if this is a friend and maybe you don't have the tools to do this, but at the same time, when their self-pity becomes infectious and contagious, that is time for you to possibly put up a boundary and go, we're not talking about that. You have to take care of yourself in this too. Okay. Points out the angel also gave him a direction and told him to move forward. The end result of that moving forward was to go to that cave and hear the small, still voice. Okay? How can you find honorable help? Pray for it, number one. Number two, someone who does not try to correct and someone who does not use shame is a sign of honorable help. If you don't have somebody like that in your life, pray for it. It's amazing the miracles the Father will do for those who desperately are seeking him. Okay? All righty. Let's see here. Anybody else? I'm just going to pray. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a monster. It can become a monster if you let it. I want to go back to something Laura brought up is, you know, when is it time to move on? One, I don't usually end friendships unless it becomes a source of real contention. And it's not about love. It's about this has gone toxic and there is no love in this. That's the only time I move on. At the same time, if somebody's just struggling, there's a big difference between engaging in self-pity and just having a bad time. It also may not be the time for you to speak. It may not be the right moment. And always ask permission before you speak something into someone's life. Because, and then I also do something where I state the motive for what I'm about to say. Okay. I love you, and that's why I'm going to say this. And it's going to sound tough, but then you kind of prepare them, okay? Because if you just sometimes come out and say it to somebody who's hurting or somebody who's doing what they're doing, it sometimes can become very, very offensive and put them on the defensive, and then it shields up and nobody gets through anymore. There's a bridge that has to happen. And when the conversation's over, let it go, okay? Oftentimes, the big mistake we often make is when somebody doesn't listen to us, we enter into ego. Because we want to see them, they're not listening, but at the same time, we can't stop somebody from doing what they're going to do in their own lives oftentimes. Okay? So hope that makes sense. I'm waiting for more questions. You guys are making me tap dance. Look at you. This is what I always worried about, not worried, but you know, I was concerned about on this show as I open it up for questions or take phone calls on Heber Nation Radio. It's like, well, if nobody calls and I've allotted a certain amount of time, you know, look at me, almost engaging in self-pity. Did you hear how that went? Ha ha ha. So anyways, so there was that old scene from, actually, I'm not going to go there. So the way that it goes, how do we come against it? When I was coming through it, one, sometimes you do need an outside stimulus to get you out of this. Sometimes you have to pray for it. And I always make the mistake sometimes of thinking that people will do exactly what I do. And I understand not everybody's where I am. They're behind, ahead of me, or, you know, not, well, that sounds prideful and arrogant. Yes, you guys are leaving me out to hang. There we go. I got two good questions here. I'm going to go to Teresa first. Teresa's asking some good ones. Is it a good idea to listen to someone who is speaking self-pity for a period of time to gain an understanding of what they're working through? Yes, to a degree. If you are saying, basically, if you're listening, just listen. Let them talk. Just let them talk. Don't try to correct. Don't try to move forward yet. Okay, because A, trust needs to be established, and B, there needs to be a rapport, and there needs to be a feeling that you are safe to talk to. But also, if you say something and you agree with them, then you're validating their self-pity, so you got to be careful. So when it comes down to self-pity, just listen. And oftentimes, somebody will hear how they're talking, and sometimes you just repeating it back will cause, you know, doing that reflective listening. Somebody says, you know, I'm just always doing this, and it never turns out well, and I'm never going to, you got to listen to always and never statements when talking to somebody like this. I'm always this, I am never that. That is self-pity, okay? Then you can't go, well, you know, yeah, you know, you always do that, that makes it feel worse, or you're never doing that, now you're arguing. Just go, sometimes you just got to go, so do you always do this? You mean always? I mean, you do that every single time? What that does is that gets them out of their emotional state if they're willing to talk, and it gets them into the logic part of it, and they go, well, no, I guess I got to say that, and it gets them out of the emotional state, okay? So this is where you've got to do some reflective listening. Ask the question back or restate it so they make sure that you understand, okay? Basic skills here. Okay, do those with self-pity surround themselves with enablers, and how do you handle that? Yes, that can happen. I will tell you this, that people of like strongholds attract each other, because people with like strongholds oftentimes make it so they don't have to change, and it's validation. How do you handle that? Very gently, and oftentimes it becomes a place where boundaries are needed to be put up between you and them, and also it'll eventually become to the point where they will step on each other's issues at a certain point, and be ready when that happens, because it's going to break up. When dysfunction attracts dysfunction, it doesn't find function. It may find comfort. It may find things within it that it goes, man, I'm really glad somebody understands me. You got to be careful with that sometimes, because when you say somebody understands me, what you're actually saying is somebody's validating me. Okay. Oh man, they get what I'm going through. Yep, they get what you're going through. Now, what are you going to do about it? So when there's no longer any forward movement, now we may have a similar stronghold, but if there's a desire to move forward, that could be very beneficial. Self-pity means that we are going to stay the same. If you stay the same, eventually you will remind each other of yourselves before too long, and that will go south. Okay. So Chalk actually asked that, and I said, how do you handle that? Just wait. Just wait. It'll go there. So let me see here. Let's see. There's not a question in that one. Okay. Yeah. So that's the thing about when you get into groups of people, it seems like we all find each other, you know? One thing about me was I was inherently, I was kind of a melancholy kid. I was like a melancholy kid, and I was always looking for the comedians. Well, the problem with comedians is a lot of times humor is a cover for a lot of pain. And kids who are funny didn't ask me to change. They just wanted an audience, you know? So it's amazing how those group dynamics work out. Teresa, once again, how do you work with a family where it is all dysfunctional and are all in self-pity? One, don't enter in unless you have credibility with them. A lot of times if there's no desire to change, there's not much you can do about that. It's the same with anybody else. If there's not a desire to change, hey, this isn't working, pray that they have that wake-up moment as a group and go, okay. But at the same time, there could be a generational aspect to this, and that's up to them to bring to the Father. They have to bring their family line to the Father. So a lot of times you've got to just put up a boundary, okay? And fellowshipping with somebody and being close friends with them is two different things. Just because somebody's engaging in this, as long as it's not taking the focus off of Yeshua, but they're working through their stuff or they're dealing with it or it's not the season for it, but it's functioning and it's not causing any issues. But if it's causing an issue in you, really, then what that means is that there needs to be a boundary. Okay. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad to see you. But at the same time, I can't be around that closely and intimately. Okay. So, okay. Aaron writes, when someone feels hopeless and self-pity and shame, but struggles to change, even though they are desperate, how do they snap out of that? Once again, it's all about changing. See, if they're dealing with nothing but pain, they're dealing with nothing but negativity, the answer is positivity. So if they're asking for help and they want to change, what they have to do is change everything that they put in themselves and everything that comes out. Meaning this, if they are struggling with self-pity and pain, they need reminders of how good the Father is and what he's done for them. They need to accept that. There is a certain, and I say this like it's easy. I will tell you that my answers seem very simple. I am one to tell you that I, having gone through this, I understand that this is not easy. The answer may be simple and it sounds easy, but I can tell you the practical walking this out for somebody struggling with this is they have to find that place and they have to choose life. You can't do this for them. You can point to it. You can love them. Like I said, you make sure that you say to them, okay, I see that you're struggling. I acknowledge that. Can we try this? Okay. Let's listen to this for a little bit. Something's negative on TV. Let's watch something else, whatever it may be. Okay. It's very, 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 sounds very simple. At the same time, put the good in. We don't fight evil with evil. We fight evil with good. And a lot of times people who have been victimized or if they've been hurt a lot, and then we're coming at them with disapproval of their actions or their decisions or the way they talk, they're just looking for more hurt. This is where we, I love you. I want to, let's change this. Just like I said, just like the angel did with Elijah. How about some food and how about a nap? And then let's see where we sit. Okay. Linda writes this, as establishing boundaries, is it okay to walk away from the person who doesn't want help? Absolutely. It is. And it's, as far as walking away, that should be the last resort. First off, I do not hold relationships cheap. I have a cat chewing on my foot. Okay. He's very lonely without his boy. As establishing boundaries, is it okay to walk away from the person who doesn't want help? That should be the last resort. Putting up a boundary means that we may not talk about this. And if they're engaging in self-pity, and if they're not open to hearing what you have to say, or they accepting the good, and it becomes self-pity inevitably kind of becomes the sponge-like posture where they're taking in things from you, or they're looking for that validation, they become very needy. And this is where this, that term, you know, I don't like it, but I mean, it's very true, that emotional vampire. I'm looking for somebody else to validate me. I'm very needy. When that becomes detrimental to you, you either have to put up a boundary or you're going to have to stop if they won't stop, if they won't respect your boundary. Okay. Anybody who doesn't want help. Yeah, that's the thing, is that if they're so far down the line, all I can do is put something, like the young man I was talking with recently, all I could do was give him something that spoke life, set it down, and walk away. I couldn't help him anymore, because what he was looking for an argument of how he was right in what he saw, and he was in anything I said. I didn't want to validate what he was feeling at all. So I was kind of on a rock and a hard place with him, and I said, okay, here's what I want you to do, if you will. I want you to listen to this. And it was a word by Derek Prince about overcoming, you know, spiritual boundaries, or spiritual forces of evil. And then I want you to do what he says in the video. I haven't heard from him. And to be honest with you, if he hasn't come back and said, hey, I did what you said, that probably means that he's out looking for validation from someone else. He's not really looking for an answer. He's looking for validation. Big difference. Okay, so Linda, you said, is it okay to walk away from somebody who doesn't want help? In certain areas, and then if they can't respect your boundaries, then yeah, it is okay. And that's never easy to do, and that's never something that I ever want to encourage, you know. When working with people with self-pity, is it best to try to talk with them in a neutral place so they aren't in their own setting? I don't know if it really matters, but it never hurts to have a different context to the conversation. Oftentimes something somewhere quiet, somewhere that they're not constant, especially if they're kind of shut in or something like that, to get them out in the sunshine sometimes can do them a lot of good. And then oftentimes talk about something other than their issue, talk about something, kind of light, you know, something that doesn't bear a lot of significance and meaning. Because one thing that I was really looking for with self-pity was, I was really feeling like my life was meaningless, and I wasn't ready to accept the fact that my life had meaning. It was like, no, I'm just this, and I'm down, and I'm all this stuff. Feeling sorry for myself is another way to put it. So let's see here. So I will tell you this, that the self-pity thing can become a real issue in your life. I do want to stop. I'll answer that after we're done, Teresa, but I do want to say this before we're done here in a couple minutes. Number one, I believe that a demon can encourage self-pity. And I do, before we close, I do want to pray for anybody struggling with this, anybody who's listening, anybody who is working. And I kind of want to give you an example of what it's like to pray against self-pity, or even while in self-pity. Okay? So if you will join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, we just come before you in the name of Yeshua, and we pray that you would give me the words that somebody who is struggling with this would be able to pray, if somebody would understand, somebody would seek you out as a result. Father in heaven, we just come before you, and we ask that for those who are hurting, those who feel lost, those who feel hopeless, we come before you now, and we ask that you comfort them. We ask that your truth comes against the lie that they're holding on to. We pray that if the person themselves is ready to move forward and ready to move, I pray right now that they would feel your healing presence. I pray that they no longer hide it or try to defend it themselves. I pray that they would trust you with it. I pray that for a spirit of faith to come upon them, and that they would relax and lower their defenses against you. Let them know that you do not disapprove of them, that you are wanting them to have that life more abundantly. And I pray that they would feel comfortable. I pray that they would feel the need to change, the need and ease in which they can bring something to you, that they wouldn't let their heart continue to rob them of your presence. We ask all these things in Yeshua's name. Amen.